Greetings all and welcome to the GCSAA podcast presented in partnership with Enview. I'm your host, Scott Hollister, and I'm happy to have you with us today. Our guest for episode 63 of the podcast is the 87th president of GCSAA, Jeff White, CGCS. Jeff is the director of agronomy at Indian Hills Country Club in Mission Hills, Kansas, where he's been since 2013. Jeff has a long track record of service on both the chapter and national levels and has been a part of the GCSA Board of Directors since 2018. Jeff's proximity to GCSA headquarters, Indian Hills, is about 45 miles east of Association HQ in lovely Lawrence, Kansas. That proximity has always given him a unique perspective on association governance and issues. So we talk with Jeff about all of that, his career in golf course management, and how he'll be approaching his year in office. And because of that proximity, we took advantage of the opportunity to record this one live and in person at Indian Hills. So the video version of the podcast will give you a little different perspective, thanks to the work done by my colleagues, Tyler Stover and Roger Billings. I want to thank them for joining me at the club, and I want to thank Indian Hills for their hospitality and for allowing us to turn one of their rooms in the clubhouse into a makeshift recording studio for episode 63 of the GCSA podcast with Association President Jeff White. A quick reminder that you have options when it comes to listening to the GCSA podcast. There is, of course, the traditional audio version available wherever you get your podcast, but we also have video versions available on GCSAA's YouTube channel as well as on GCSA TV. So whatever your preferred method, we have you covered. So please check those out, subscribe if you haven't already, and rate and review us if the spirit moves you. And with that, let's go. This is episode 63 of the GCSAA podcast featuring GCSAA's 87th president, Jeff White, CGCS. Well, it's not very often that we record these podcasts in person, face-to-face. Part of that is the convenience of technology, like Zoom and stuff. I can interview folks from all over the globe thanks to the magic of Zoom, which we all discovered during the pandemic. But when the president of GCSA is 15 minutes down the road from your home, you come to the club, you get a fabulous room like this, and you do it in person. Jeff White, the 87th president of GCSA, is our guest today. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Thanks for taking the time. How's you officially took office during the annual meeting in Phoenix, and I know pretty much right away you just started going. What has the, as we record this early April, so it's been about 2 months, what have those 2 months been like for you?
Track meet. It's been, I thought I was ready and able, and I'm obviously ready and able, but it's faster paced than I thought. I'm almost not a quarter into my presidential year, but as the golf season wakes up here and the things that are going on my paying job and trying to keep up with that and do, help do my service to GCSA, it's gone a lot quicker. I just did a update for the club here, and they titled it "Where in the World is Jeff White?" and it was kind of cool to put the pins on the map and give a little background of where I've been and what's been going on, and it's been a great experience, better than I expected going in, but it's been nonstop, and we're in a little bit of a lull here between allied activities and then getting back into board, the strategic planning and spring board meeting coming up here next week.
Yeah, well, it's probably a good time to have a bit of a lull because the grass is starting to wake up here, and I'm sure your members are chomping at the bit to get out there and play. So at least give you a little bit of time to get you and your crew kind of focused on heading into end of the season. You got anything big planned around here as you head into the season this year?
No, once we leave project mode, we hit maintenance mode, and the way our schedule is set up, but we have a very active golf membership. Lots of functions, lots of special events, lots of activity all day, every day, not necessarily all on the golf course, but lots of food and beverage activity that becomes part of my world as well. So we have about 5 directors that we all have to be on the same page to function and make it come off without a hitch. And so those meetings have been going on all the last couple of weeks and with my staff as well. No major projects. No, we have our usual golf schedule, which is packed full 6 days a week.
Well, hopefully Mother Nature cooperates with you to kind of allow you to juggle all this stuff. I know you've got a great crew here working for you. We'll talk about them in a little bit. I want to start off. We'll start some personal stuff. First off, you and I, well, this will be a rehash on some of this stuff for us because we went and covered a lot of the same ground for the story in GCM. So I'd suggest anyone listening or watching, head over to GCM Online. You can find the story that ran in the March issue on Jeff. But from that, I want to just kind of talk about you a little bit, your career, how you kind of got to where you are now. Grew up in a small town in Iowa, Osceola, Iowa. That's, I guess, southeast?
South Central.
Yeah, South Central, Iowa. What was golf like as you were growing up in Osceola, Iowa?
Like several other Midwestern states, I'm not sure who currently owns the record for 9-hole facilities per capita. It's got to be us or Kansas. What do they do?
Yeah.
So I switched states, but I probably hold the same record. But we had a small town, like a lot of small towns, a little 9-hole course. We did actually have bent grass greens on the one I grew up on, but some of the surrounding areas had sand greens, and that was probably where I really learned to play golf was out. You had an honor box, you put money in, you went and you played all day, hit sand greens, rake your own line. Golf was not a big part of my outdoor experience when I was a kid. We did a lot of lake stuff. We did a lot of traveling as a family, several different sports, but outdoors was my jam. Golf, a lot of my friends as we grew up got into golf, and I joined them and kind of learned more about playing golf, not the world of golf, the business of golf that I'm in now, but from that experience.
I also have sand green experience. Baker University, my alma mater, had a little Baldwin City Country Club was a 9-hole sand green, exactly the same experience. The old Folgers can sitting on what amounted to the clubhouse, which was more of a shed than anything. And although we would rarely putt, I don't know if you actually putted. We would putt. We were bad enough that if you simply were able to land the ball on the sand green, we just added a stroke and considered it good, and we moved on. But yeah, I had a lot of fond memories. I think there's only a handful of states that still have high school sand green golf tournaments. I think Kansas and Iowa are among probably less than five.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I have been invited to men's league at that facility numerous times over the last few years, and I just haven't had the bandwidth to do it. But one of my bucket listers is to join this infamous men's league Wednesday night extravaganza on the sand greens of Baldwin City Country Club.
Yeah, that is. I haven't been there, and well, probably since right after school. At least I've been to Baldwin, but not to the golf course. But sand greens. Not a lot of turf grass management when you're dealing with sand greens, other than just the gang mowing the fairways and roughs. I know you ended up getting work on a golf course as you were growing up. Did you ever envision, did the connection ever click for you to go, hey, this turf grass management thing is kind of interesting to me, maybe I can marry this too? Or was it largely just a summer job, basically?
Early on, I worked for the city, Parks and Rec, both in like the pool maintenance and all those things. Also all the parks, cemeteries, mowed cemeteries. That's an interesting, you know, dynamic and vibe when you're doing that. You know, some things can go pretty dark in your mind at that 8-hour day on that day. Yeah. But I didn't put it together as golf and turf grass management and all that until I was in school. I just knew I wanted to be outside and love the game, the challenge, the things that come along with the turf grass management side. And as we move on, you know, in my career, you know, it becomes less about the part I love about the business and more part about the business. And that's just part of growing up and part of experiencing, you know, hitting career goals and moving up the ladder. But I do miss, occasionally I do go out on, and the guys will send somebody out to get me, and I'll be like, if I don't tell you to come get me, I don't want to be got. Like, there's a reason why I'm on the piece of equipment that takes the longest thing to mow or do or whatever we're doing out there. And I do still love it. And it was by accident more than anything that I ended up in turf grass management, the golf course business, but it's been my whole career, and I've loved it. It's been very rewarding and a big part of my life, and provided for me and my family. It's been a great ride.
You obviously had an amazing mentor during your days at Iowa State in John Newton, recent winner of the GCSAA's Colonel John Morley Award. And there's some other mentors we'll touch on as we continue here. But what role did John have in really introducing you to what the business was, what this career was, and just the overall influence he had on kind of setting you on this course?
I think probably the biggest thing, and I don't know if we've ever put it in an article or I've ever said it to him or out loud or any of my communications, but the one thing that I took away from John was it's a job, right? And it's grass. And his leadership and his kind of mentality were like, come in, have fun, get it done. And I think that carried with me, much to the not beneficial parts of some of my other people who I work for of the have fun, get it done attitude. But I think, and I still, when I get in a bind and I'm, you know, I've reached out through my network and all those things and I'm banging my head against the wall, when I bowl it all out and cool off or on the drive home or however I get there, you know, it was about have fun, get it done. I mean, it's not easy what we do, but it is fun, and it can be fun even in the most challenging times if you keep that attitude as you work your way through the process.
I've been fortunate, you've been fortunate enough to see maintenance operations at a lot of majors. Big, giant events, worldwide attention, stress levels unbelievably high, sleep unbelievably low. But everyone is just having a ball. Even though they were up at 3:30 and, you know, half their work is done in the dark and the weather you're dealing with and all that stuff. And that's eye-opening to have those opportunities to kind of see that stuff and know that that kind of philosophy that you learned from someone like John really extends throughout the industry and big events like that.
And having had the good fortune to go see the places I've seen and be a part of the experience and behind the scenes looks at all different kinds of facilities and majors and local golf tournaments, whatever, but there's a time to be serious and there's an eye for detail and all the things that go in, but that work has all been done as they lead up to that event. Like when they,
right.
You can look back and watch the good ones go through that week in one of two ways, as a dictator and a control type of person, or a person who built the staff, believes in the staff, and lets it run and has fun. Everybody has fun, because to your point, yeah, there's lots of accolades and lots of cool parts of that experience, and I've never personally been in that position, nor do I maybe care to, because I've seen plenty of people along the way that I got to experience it, but not the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And then the other part of that equation is you watch the leaders that really develop a team that have that mentality. Like, yeah, it is a grind, that 7-day stretch that you're in the actual event, but they make it a point to check in on their staff and make it fun and have games and have free time because I think you have to somehow get to the other side. And the John, we experienced a lot of problems, and we were all college kids, right? We didn't necessarily have a vested interest other than it was our home course for our university. But, you know, it was not easy to, even though it's an easier climate than I grew up in now, we always had our challenges, and he never looked ruffled. He would just, you know, we've made a plan, stuck to it, did it, and although it was a lot of hard work, it was always fun.
Yeah, unflappable. I mean, I didn't know John. I knew of John. I didn't know John before he received the award and had a chance to obviously meet him and spend some time with him, and pretty impressive. I knew his son, as you do, Mark Newton, who's been kind of a fixture in both golf and on the industry side down here in the Kansas City area. But yeah, it's been cool getting to know him. And I think there's a lot of similarities, obviously, but I think that Midwestern upbringing is kind of commonplace where you grew up, where I grew up here in Kansas. And that kind of extends to what got you down here to the Sunflower State eventually. Another Iowa Stater, Dick Stuntz, who was a longtime superintendent at Alvimar in Lawrence. You had another awesome mentor in Pat Finlan, who got you to Lake Quivira in the Kansas City area. And folks probably know Pat from his stint as a GCSA president, time at the Olympic Club, now enjoying life in the wilds of Montana. Dick also was very involved in the association. So my question is kind of when you were brought down here, when you were at Alvimar, you were at the time, I think it was the old, was that the old association headquarters
building? The headquarters building I think it's still there. The original headquarters building. I think building one was built when I got, maybe my internship year, they're still in headquarters, but shortly thereafter, building one was built, and the building was on the 16th hole, the then public course, which is now the Jayhawk Club, which is now no longer, I don't know what hole it is.
Yeah. But I drove through there the other day and I'm like, I don't really know. I used to know where I am. I don't know where I am.
Yeah, no.
But, did you have a connection to GCSA back then? I mean, you're a stone's throw of two iron from headquarters. Did you feel you had a connection, at that point with the association?
You know, probably not. I didn't, but I was 22 years old. I didn't have a lot of vision other than getting through that day.
Sure.
And then, getting through that day and going to the next pub or whatever we were doing that day after work, playing golf. We played a lot of golf that time period. But even though the building was there and I was employed in the city that is still our headquarters, I don't think I had a connection, but I hadn't been shown the path either. And we did a lot of interaction with GCSA staff back then with, orientations and committee meetings and stuff would be on property, but I just never wasn't in a position that maybe needed GCSA at the point, but also didn't really understand the who and what GCSA is either. Probably not even, by the time I left Alvimar, I was a little more connected, but really was in, and Dick was very connected because he's there forever and was part of the thing, but probably didn't make the true jump from understanding the why and the reasons and the of GCSA until I started working for Pat, and also very involved, successful career with his on the golf course side, but also in the association side. And as I became more involved at the local level, then that connection between home chapter and the mothership, as I like to refer to GCSA as, that connection just was fostered and grew from there.
It's interesting. Both of those gentlemen, Dick and Pat, have had obviously great turf grass related careers, but they've also expanded. Dick's done some golf course ownership. He was actually the president of the National Golf Course Owners Association, not in the too distant past. Pat has grown into general manager roles, took a pretty high position within the Olympic Club in San Francisco, now has done some consulting. So interesting how both of their careers have kind of started on turf and moved elsewhere. Do you have designs on anything like general manager or?
I do and I don't. I mean, I know at some point at 5 o'clock alarm clocks and wake up calls and just physically, the seasonal grind, I just won't be, I'll be ready to do something different.
Yeah.
I don't know what that something different will be. It will be in golf. I just don't know what that will be. But I'm going to do what I'm doing for as long as this club will have me, and I love it here and they treat me well and they're gracious people and really respect what we do in our industry and trust me as their expert. Even though Google is out there and, we have a ton of internet agronomists at all our facilities that like to tell us how to do our jobs. So I foresee something like that. But I think the two of those that you mentioned too, as to why I am where I am today in my career and as far as involvement in my local and the national chapter amongst other duties in organizations, really came from them too, that what you get out of it is way bigger than what you will ever put in it and what opportunities and doors that will open for you, for, for putting yourself out there and giving back to the career that you chose.
Yeah, and you had an opportunity to kind of see that as Dick was involved. And you talked about, I remember doing my orientation, going to Alfamar. That was really my first exposure to the management side of golf. Pat, the same way. We talked when we were doing the interview for the story that there wasn't necessarily an aha moment where you were like, I am ready to serve. It was more of just kind of a gradual process where you saw the way those gentlemen operated. You got to, you know, they started to bring you to chapter meetings. You started to see that stuff. I'm curious, was there a point as your involvement continued and that you said, hey, I'm kind of interested in national service. I've done a lot with my home chapter, the Heart of America. I've got to shout out the local
heck chapter. Yeah. Chapters. We got the Kansas, Ozark, Mississippi Valley. Right. We got a bunch of us around here. Yeah. So
Iowa, we'll throw
Iowa in there too.
We'll open the door for the Midwestern chapters. But as you started to serve on that, was there a point where, you know, maybe you talked to Leanne or maybe you talked to some folks and you say, you know what, I'm kind of interested in taking this to another step, another level?
Well, I'll preface what I'm going to say next first. I'm going to say that and you may or may not have got this out of either one of Dick or Pat, but I would wager that neither one of them thought that I would ever become the 87th GCSA president. They both mentored me in a really young part of my career, and they're probably second guessing themselves as to leading me down this path. But I don't know if there was an aha moment, but as you experience what you experience in my local service, and then being on national task groups and committees and meeting those groups of people from all over the country and the world, and then serving as chapter delegate for the Heart of America and meeting another group of people and having true friendships with a lot of staff just because of my location to headquarters, it just seemed kind of natural. Like, yeah, I think I want to do this, and there's a lot of reasons why to do it and what I think I can bring to the table. And so I don't know if there was like, yeah, let's do it. I think Pat was probably the one that the end that was like, I think you should do this. When you do, it's up to you. There's no good time. There's no right time to run. It's when you feel comfortable. And so he's probably the one that pushed me to go further than what I was already doing. But there was no aha moment. It's just a natural progression, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's probably natural. A lot of folks who have preceded you in this path, and those will come afterwards, probably would say the same thing, as it just became a natural thing. It became part of your life. I mean, to serve and to give back and do those things. And so it kind of makes sense to get to this point. We're sitting here in your home, in your club here at Indian Hills, Mission Hills, Kansas, as we record this. I bet a lot of folks listening are probably curious if they're in a role and they're like, man, I wouldn't mind considering doing something for my chapter or whatnot, but I don't know how my club would react. What kind of support has this place provided you as you've kind of undertaken this journey?
Well, you start that conversation first with your family.
Okay,
because they're going to be affected probably more than your employer. And I ask early on, before I was kind of ready to go run for the first time, because I need their support, and I needed to show them a picture of what this experience is like for me, but on the backside, what that experience yields them as well. Right. Because if I look back at my first year on the board compared to my skill set is quite a bit different and improved because of the experiences I've been able to have along the way. But I think it's not for everybody and it's not for every club, but you know, we need people to do the job. And I really am proud of the range of different people we have on the current board. I mean, you got state government, you got family owned business, you got high end clubs, you have who GCSA is. And,
right.
And that's, I think that works well for a board to be made up of its constituents. And so to have their support, and this club is just, it's a very historical, it's a very traditional club, but they are super excited about hosting USGA qualifiers. Like, they want to be connected to the bigger part of the game than just it's their leisure place that they come and that's their second home. And that's what we provide them here. But they want to be part of the future of golf too. And so they, I think, they see that as they see this, me doing this as an extension of them and part of their, part of, you know, maintaining the game going forward.
You obviously couldn't do it without those, the folks down in the maintenance facility. And I guess you can see on, I was going to say on the audio, you can't see me pointing, but on video, you can definitely see me pointing.
It's that way.
Yeah, that's right. Kurt, Derek, Nick, I'll like just give you a little bit to kind of tip the cap to those guys, because you obviously can't do what you've been able to do with the board of director without support of the team that you've got down in maintenance. So how big a how important have they been to what you've been able to achieve over the last 7-8 years?
Kurt's the only one that's been with me the whole time. Derek and Nick are tenured now, but fairly new. And Nick, I hired when he was a 16-year-old kid at Lake Rivera, like this little punk kid. Their whole family worked there at Cart Barn and out golf maintenance, all that. But you know, I built, just like I had to build my foundation with my family and my employer, I had to build a foundation in those folks, in trust in them, that whether I'm here or not, whether I'm serving for GCSA or not, it's just the right thing to do, because they're going to become better leaders, business people, et cetera, along the way. And it sets them up for a career, whether they choose to be involved in association management or not, that's up to them. But at least, I couldn't do it without them. I tell them all the time. I thank them all the time, because I could not be away and still have my mental health if they were not here, running the show. In fact, in today's world, I probably get in the way more than I do, you know, help when I'm here. And I've tried to, that's been a hard, because we all have a little bit of type A and a little bit of control freakiness in this business. And it's hard to let go and let them, you know, I give them the list and let them go build it and let them do it. And it doesn't have to be my way. But I can't thank them enough for all that they do for me. And cause I couldn't do it without them.
Yeah. And that's Kurt Lading, your equipment manager, Derek Vanwart, who's superintendent. Is that correct?
Yep.
And then Nick is a top assistant here. Yep. So, been fun for me getting to know those guys a little bit, being in the neighborhood and getting to come over here as much as I have. They've been, cool guys to get to know, and they do really, they make you look good. So that's,
and they do indeed. And we do have I got a bunch of K-Staters, obviously, because.
And I appreciate that about them.
Because of the school. And I have Kurt, who's a Jayhawk. You know, when I moved here from Ames, Iowa to Lawrence, Kansas, like, that was a hard move, man. Like, watching your team die in Allen Fieldhouse in a basketball season is just not a pleasant experience.
We have that in common with my team as well. That happens a lot at Allen Fieldhouse for my team. So, well, let's take a quick break. We got to pay some bills. Shout out our friends at Enview, our partners in this podcast endeavor. And we'll be back with more with Jeff White right after this.
As a proud goal level partner of the GCSAA podcast, MBU is committed to working with golf course superintendents to accomplish great things on the course each day. MBU has the expertise and innovative solutions to help you meet the challenges of maintaining your course through the tricky spring and summer transition to make sure it's beautiful and playable through your peak season. Summer's almost here, but you can still master grassy and broadleaf weeds and warm season turf with the right products and expert advice from the MBU Green Solutions team. And to protect your roots from underground threats, supply Resilia Root Health Solution. This all-in-one, first-of-its-kind product protects from below to safeguard your roots from dangerous underground threats and keep your turf healthy, beautiful, and playable all season long. Cool season turf needs special care in the spring to guard against Pythium root, rot, and nematodes that can damage your turf later in the season. Treat soon for the best control and reach out to the MBU team for support and expert assistance. Summer weeds can be tough to control in warm season turf if you let them get a head start. Make sure to apply a post-emergence herbicide while weeds are still young and combine it with a pre-emergence for extended control. contact your MBU representative or go to us.envu.com/golf to learn more about agronomic solutions that can help control weeds, diseases, and soil-borne pathogens this winter for a more beautiful, playable course next year. And always read and follow label instructions. Not all products are registered in all states.
All right, welcome back. We're still sitting here with Jeff White.
We haven't moved.
No, we probably should have during the break. We should have gotten up and done some calisthenics or something. But Jeff White, 87th president of GCSA, the director of agronomy at Indian Hills Country Club here in Mission Hills, Kansas, our gracious host today. So thank all your fellow leaders here for letting us come in here and set up all this stuff and do this at the club. We talked about your career a little bit, how you got into service, and I want to kind of pivot now and talk about some association matters that are going on and just kind of let you. We talked about this when we worked on the story, and I think the overarching point that you made at that time was not unlike other presidents. You have 1 year in office, unless you're Kevin Breen. Then you get two, thanks to Kevin Sunderman.
Or there's a world war or something else that happens.
That's right. Yeah, some sort of big worldwide event. But 1 year in office, this isn't something where you can come in with a full agenda and put something in 12 months. So turning the battleship that is GCSAA can be difficult. However, there were certain things that you wanted to kind of focus on or at least continue. That had been started by your predecessors in this role. First off, just on the maybe just share what your goals were coming into this year. I think we made some of those points in the story, but how did you view your 12 months in this seat?
You said you can't steer the battleship. My goal was to not sink the battleship. Financially, any way, shape, or form, not sink the battleship. But I think what I took out of your question, one thing was, I don't think you should come in as president in a 12-month span and bring an agenda and try to steer the battleship. That's not what your role is. Your role is to continue the path that and hopefully find it, leave it better than you found it, and set and keep the foundation moving. Foundation blocks that we have built through the strategic plan, all those things we do. And then there's always going to be something that comes up. Like there's always going to be a top five or a hot button or something like that. But the one thing that's not going away anytime soon is all the advocating for ourselves and protecting our resources. And that's kind of where my whole term as a board member and president and then up to the chairs has been, let's tell our story and be part of the solution, not wait for it to be told to us and then right. have to deal with the consequences. And that's not an easy thing to do, but it's a way that I think we can have something better for those who come behind me to build upon from there.
Well, it's perfect segue. You must have been looking at my notes here because I wanted to start off and talk about advocacy and talk about, I mean, as I mentioned in the first half, we are recording this in early April. In about a month from now will be National Golf Day in Washington, D.C. It's become kind of a hallmark event on the calendar for the association. I don't know how, and you might have a better feel for this, interacting with your peers here locally. Kind of hard to get a sense of the overall membership. Obviously, there is a core group that are unbelievably involved. There's going to be over 200 GCSA members taking part in that event. But what would you tell kind of the rank and file about the importance of that event and more broadly kind of the importance of the advocacy efforts that the association has really focused a lot of time, energy, and resources on increasing?
Well, I would say advocacy in general, with whether you talk about National Golf Day and before that, just meetings on the Hill or whatnot, and where we were when I, my young part of my career to where we are now, we're light years ahead of where, and that's taken staff, members, others, connections, networking, all those things to get to where we are. And I feel like we finally are recognized. We finally have a seat at the table. People do listen to what we have to say. And that's not necessarily what I see when I travel the rest of the world around us. Our friends to the north and friends in the EU, they don't have that. They haven't been able to make that click. And do we have an uphill challenge that lies ahead of us? 100%. But where we sit now compared to where we were and where we're headed, I think, is paramount. Like we are, it's never going to go away and it's never going to get any easier, but we've developed relationships and built bridges to have successful and find some common ground, find some common sense solutions to problems that we do face. And that takes all of us. And I would say to those who haven't done it, I went to National Golf Day before I was on the board. I enjoy DC, parts of it. There's parts of the political process that I don't care to be involved in, but I think that's where we have to be. Like we have to be, that's why we have 535 ambassadors. That's why we have this partnership with the PGA Tour. I mean, the PGA of America, like we have to keep building this net, casting this net to protect ourselves, our careers, our professions, and the tools and resources we need along the way.
I've been lucky enough to take part in not all, but a host of National Golf Days. And the difference, the doors that are open to GCSAA and the superintendent profession now, whether that's with legislators or regulators, compared to what they were when this effort first started, is night and day. And I'm sure you've seen it because you've taken many more meetings than I've been a part of. But I'm sure you're getting the opportunities you're getting now are far different than the opportunities that we had 10, 15 years ago.
Well, yeah, we would have never wanted to be in the room with the EPA in the old days. Like that was like taboo, or OSHA, or any other regulatory, organization or part of government. But we've, through HAVA and all her work and Michael and Bob and the whole that whole team, but that three-person team can't do it all either. We all have to be part of the machine. But to develop those relationships and develop the ability to sit in that room and have a civil conversation it's life-changing, career-changing for all of us. And I've been blessed to be a part of seeing that those opinions and perceptions change, and to be able to be in the room with those folks and have real conversations, not just blowing smoke.
Advocacy, obviously there's a huge trickle down to members all over the country when the association undertakes efforts like that. Similarly, turfgrass research is another area that will benefit not only superintendents like yourself at a club like Indian Hills, but superintendents all over the country. Big event for that effort for the association is also upcoming April 22nd through the 28th. That's Rounds for Research. I'll kind of let you get on your soapbox here, tell members that might not know what Rounds for Research is, just very quickly what it is and why do you think it's such a key initiative for GCSAA?
Well, if you don't know what Rounds for Research is by now, you just have not read or an email or a publication or any other form, way, shape, or form of communication that would tell you what Rounds for Research is. We use it here locally to fund, well, we were funding two universities, Missouri and Kansas State, but to help them because the governmental sector and the private sector have, there's not as much funding available as there once was.
And
going back to kind of advocacy, not Rounds for Research, but getting turfgrass research in the Farm Bill was a big deal that took several years to get that to come along and be part of the equation.
Sure.
And the Farm Bill always gets kicked down the curb, and it'll be approved probably before November because it's election year. But Rounds for Research, and I just got an update yesterday. I think we are ahead year over year by a good chunk of change, and it's starting to take the effects. The why is starting. People are starting to get the why. And how beneficial it can be, whether you're a small chapter, big chapter. If you're a small chapter, get together with a bunch of small chapters. If you're a big chapter, you're already successful. But we have to do our part. This is another way of doing our part, our membership, not and the end user. We're doing we're selling rounds to people who are the end user. And that's a connection that GCSA has never really been able to make before.
Right.
And so, and now we're starting to get partners along the way in that, whether it's golf associations or local sections of the PGA or whatever, to come along to be part of that, that growth and the to share in the workload of generating, gathering the rounds, getting them in the auction, getting the money back to the chapters, and those chapters using it to help support their local turf grass researchers.
You're seeing an increase in the number of courses who are appreciating the effort and donating rounds to be auctioned off. And then golfers, I think, are starting to go, hey, there's some pretty awesome golf courses available there, and I can help the game that I love by participating in that. So both of those efforts are hugely important. Rounds for Research, just head over to GCSA's website. You can search for that and find all the information you need.
It's been on the front page for like 4 months. You've missed it. Yes. You're just not looking. But having, to your point about some of these bigger, well-known facilities get on board, and if you can't donate rounds, if your membership or your clientele or whoever you work for will not let you, there's always a cash donation.
Right.
We take money no matter how you want to give it.
And Jeff White, Indian Hills, no, I'm sure you will direct that in the proper area.
Send it to me. No, just kidding.
let's pivot to another effort that you and I spoke about for the GCM story, but that's the association's increased interest in workforce development, labor, addressing the huge labor challenges that, you know, despite your facility size, your budget, golf courses, big and small, all over the country, are wrestling with this. And we'll tie in the First Green there. Obviously, efforts like the First Green, where the STEM, now STEAM, education program that's bringing it's bringing school children to golf courses and using golf courses as living laboratories. Those are kind of long plays, but talk about, I mean, maybe what kind of labor challenges do you face here? And as just a superintendent who has to fill those spots, what do efforts like this from the National Association kind of mean to you? And do you see the light at the end of the tunnel from efforts such as these?
That was like three questions in by the way.
I'm really throwing curveballs.
That was
here.
A lot. That was a
to...
lot to digest and to dissect.
I want to make
put
sure
into
that
one
you're...
answer, but I'll get it done.
All right.
So we're going to back up to where you started. I don't know that I can honestly name all the work initiatives that is going on in GCSA right now, nor all of the other associations and all the other parts of the business and every other industry. But I will say, we are better off today than we were in general. Just it doesn't matter whether we're talking about McDonald's or golf course superintendents, that there seems to be a trend of people being back at work.
Right.
But I think in coming up here in next week at our two meetings, that will be a big part of all the pieces, the Warrior Alliance, the STEM, First Green, name all the stuff that's out there. Other associations, industries are doing something similar. FFA is coalescing that all together, and to your point, it is a long game, and it's going to be even more present and prevalent as the boomers roll out, and there's going to be all these great jobs that come open, and we just not fill in the pipeline from a line employee all the way up to golf course superintendent. So that I use the word foundation a lot. But the foundation is built. Now, how do we make it? Now, how do we make it go? That's the next steps, and that's a big part of the board's current strategic plan, is to get that all moving in one direction and help fill the need. Because here locally, I was talking to a superintendent, kind of on the outside of the city. You know, hired two people individuals in for more money than he'd ever hired anybody in for, and still try to keep a gap between your seasonal staff and full-timers, or
sure,
if it's a full-time employee, you know, it's hard to manage the numbers right now because you don't know where you need to be, sort of, and you don't want to undercut your your tenured staff and whatnot. And so individually, we all have a different challenge, but that's a challenge of today that maybe we didn't see coming. But they were literally on site for like 2 weeks and just walked off.
Yeah.
And it's a number that's larger than than you know, minimum wage or the fast food restaurant, or the going fast food restaurant rate or whatever. So that's one I hadn't seen coming that we'll have to figure out. You know, the number's never going to be right or the number it should be. It's just not. But how can we help recruit the next generation? We'll be part of this, coalescing all these other programs into one moving forward.
Golf course management, it's a challenging job. I mean, you are exposed to the elements. It's hard work. It can be physical work. It's not for everyone. Those who love it, like yourself and the the team you've built here, they love it, man, and it feeds that. And I've seen that all over. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that kind of comes with the territory. Is not everyone is gonna jump into this kind of work and go, oh, hey, this is my life's calling. So,
but it's us who have been who do love it and have been in it forever that need to share that story.
Yeah.
Not the negativity side of
it.
Right. The there's a reason why we all stuck in it, stay with it, right? We need to share that story with the younger folks and show them that there's an opportunity to have a great career. It doesn't have to be in golf course maintenance. It can be in the golf shop, or it can be anywhere in the club or golf course industry. But obviously we're going to advocate for our portion.
Right.
And
right.
Try to bring those folks into the fold.
The last kind of topic I wanted to touch on, it's a little bit full circle because it supports advocacy. It supports a lot of the other things that the association is trying to do. That's the environmental programs efforts the GCSA puts forth, and the BMPs, the best management practices for golf courses. There's been a wide effort to bring those to state levels, then down to local levels, then down to facility levels. Some superintendents might go, I'm interested. I'm obviously an outdoorsman, so I'm interested in doing the right thing for my golf course. I don't want to pollute. It also makes business sense for my facility not to overwater, not to use too many products. But they don't see that connection to broader efforts like advocacy and things like that. You've been there on the front lines, and you've seen how some of those environmental efforts that have been important to GCSA have benefited us when connecting with regulators and legislators. What have your experiences been like that, and why do you personally feel those efforts are so important for the association?
I think if you travel to Canada or Europe, you'll see why the BMPs are important. Not just that every state has one, but as many facilities as we can, because it's always better to be proactive than reactive. And that's how we've gotten here, even to get to the BMPs state by state, but then moving it forward. And you've seen folks that have had to do it because they were up against the wall.
Right.
And you never want to be in that position. You always want to try to be connecting the dots before it's dictated to you how you're going to operate. And that's why the BMPs at the local level are as important as anything else we do, because when I'm going to go sit down with my city government or state government or whoever I'm sitting down with, and I have 500 golf courses in their area and 350 of them have BMPs, they're not all going to be cookie cutter either. It's going to be done to that facility, just like mine is done to mine versus the state manual. So that is a good tool in the toolbox to protect ourselves moving forward, in because we don't even know what the next set of battles will be.
Right.
So at least we can control the narrative now and build that base. And then, but we have yet to figure out how to make that connection for folks who just don't want to do it on their own and think it's the right thing to do.
Right.
That's where we are now. And then once we do that, how do you show that people are truly, they don't want to have, it's not a piece of paper on somebody's desk, right? It's being used.
Yeah.
And I think that's our next thing that boards, so on and so forth, will be challenged with moving forward, is to continue the progress we've already made, but take to the next level.
Yeah. We were talking about the long game with, like, the First Green workforce development, some of those efforts, the efforts with the FFA, things like that. That really applies to all of these. You can't take your fifth step until you take your first step. So it's building that foundation. That's happened with BMPs, started at the creating an overall plan, moving that to the state level, then into the individual facility level. And I think it also kind of informs board service. You're in that, you're in the boardroom as a member of the National Board of Directors for anywhere from 7 to 9 years, depending. And kind of goes back to what we talked about, the old battleship axiom. You're not trying to do that because you've been involved in these efforts for 8 or 9 years. And that's really probably, I would imagine, how you folks view that service, is that I was part of this team for that time, and I want to look at the accomplished. What has changed from between year one and year nine? And I'm assuming that's kind of how you guys view your time on the board.
Yeah, and the byproduct of a lot of the stuff that I'll use First Green, because it's not about showing people it is about showing people about our career. But stories you hear from all over the country is also changing the perception of the golf course world,
right,
of that we're, you know, that we're toxic to the environment and we're doing all these things. And there's all these other little things that we didn't maybe see or know or thought that would be part of the reason why, that have now in all of the, whether you're talking about labor or regulation of pesticides and fertilizers, like all the pieces tie together. And
right,
so seeing that through and then seeing where you were when you started as a first year board member to where is just a, it's kind of a great experience, and we hope we're doing the right things for the right reasons, but it's, that's what it should be, is it's not a grade card. It's not a scorecard. It's not a, you know, I mean, I'm sure I would, you know, members would love if I raised another $1 billion and their,
yeah,
dues would stay the,
right,
same. Right. I mean, but that's not the why, and that's not how it works. But I just want to see it, some of the things that were started in my younger part of my board service and before I was on the board, come to fruition. And but all the little stuff that's tied together, you just don't. If I was just a GCSA member, not very involved in a local or national association, I wouldn't get it. But seeing that from a,
yeah,
from in the boardroom is quite different than just you know, outside looking in. And
yeah,
it's been a great experience and taught me a lot along the way.
Front row seat for all of that. So, well, there's no good segue here. I have, because I've got a couple of fun quick hitters to hit you with here, but I've appreciated you taking the time today to do this. You and I never have fun when we're together. We really struggle to do that, but these will be pretty good. So first off, you're a hobby farmer now, or at least that's what you called yourself last time we were chatting. You've got a little place kind of between Kansas City and Lawrence. What's the best part about that new livestock? It's relatively new. And what's the worst part?
The best part is the sunset every day. It never gets old. The hard part, or the worst part, is I need all the tools and stuff that my members provide for me here, equipment, et cetera, to paying that for that with my own money versus paying for it with their money. Two different stories.
You haven't bought a trailer and you're just bringing stuff back and forth?
I have bought a trailer. I have bought several other things. but family-based, you know, the family heritage will continue with our small little tract of land. The land and I have ventured down. I spent about 4 hours mowing some pasture the other day. It was kind of peaceful, tranquil. There was no cell phone buzzing. There was no...
There you go.
It was a way to get away from it all.
Yeah, it's like getting away here, climbing on a mower and mowing roughs or whatever. When you're trying to clear your mind, you get to do that out
100%.
Of the homestead as well. All right, a couple of golf ones. Favorite golf course you've ever played?
Ever played? Some of them won't be the actual course, but the people I played them with, that I was happy to know those people. But Cypress Point's one, Sage Valley's one. I haven't played the old course, but played Jubilee. I mean, there's so many great,
yeah,
tracks. There's so many great tracks in every state that you'll never go play. And
yeah,
in my own state, I haven't even played the best courses in my own state, because there's, you know, there's just not enough time. But
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if I have a favorite. I just like to be out there with people I enjoy spending time with. And
yeah,
if I shoot 70 or 170, it doesn't really matter. I'll never shoot 70, but
yeah,
it's about the experience more than the facility.
Old course on your bucket list then?
Yeah, I need to get back over there. There's a few other places to play over there as well, but
You got Prairie Dunes off your list here in Kansas?
I got one up on you then. Yeah, I've known that? several superintendents there, including the current one, and I need to go see him because he has a bunch of Rainbird products for sale after their irrigation renovation. But yeah, I have not crossed that one off.
Yeah, it's a good one. Dream foursome. You talked about the people you play with being more important than the golf course. Who do you have a dream foursome? Is it family? Is it celebrities? What would that look like for you?
I don't know. It'd probably be.
It could be a foursome too. We'll allow
it,
that.
Yeah, it might have to be two groups or maybe more, but it would probably be people that are no longer here. My father never. I think I maybe played golf with my father one time. He wasn't a big golfer, but yeah. Would be one. Anybody in my family, two. Other than that, you know, if I've got somebody, if I'm playing golf with somebody we have some shared interest and we can go spend 2 to 5 hours together and not talk about golf.
Yeah.
at least the part of the golf that what we live in.
Right.
Would be a pretty good foursome or fivesome or tensome, how many people we have.
All right. Last one. Well, first off, have you ever had a hole in one?
No.
Okay. Well, so this question's very appropriate. Which one? You can only have one, a hole in one, or Iowa State winning a national championship. And you can pick basketball or football, either one. Which one are you taking?
Easy, Iowa State national championships.
Good. If you'd said K-State, I'd gone that direction.
Yeah, I would never say K-State in a million years. But, or KU, as far as I guess. They already have national titles anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we have debate, and K-State's got debate and meat judging and things like that.
So yeah, national champions.
Pretty
debate,
proud of that.
Debate and meat judging.
Yeah. Hope you like your steaks, because otherwise.
Homegrown, baby.
How are they going to get judged?
I have a fridge full of them at home. Freezer full of home. We're making some tonight. The girls are back in town, so.
Well, awesome. Jeff White, thank you so much, man, for taking the time to do this. Appreciate it. And continued success with everything. Really appreciate you doing this and hosting us here at the fabulous Indian Hills Country Club.
Well, I will take some time to say thank you for having me, and also for those who don't know, this is will be the last one, probably the last one that Scott hosts for us, because he has decided to move on and pursue another career opportunity, similar business and folks we all know. But we do appreciate everything you've done us over the years, and you will be missed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Luckily, we're some quasi neighbors. You're not going away.
No, I'll still pass to you. And yeah, it's this is one we've actually been banging out a couple of these this week, trying to kind of help the folks staying behind keep this thing going. I'm going to miss it a lot. I'm going to miss the people. I'm going to miss the job. I'm going to miss this podcast. It is fun to have these opportunities to do this. But as you and I both know, when we look in the mirror, we're not getting any younger. And
nope.
This opportunity came up, and it was a very hard decision. But I'm excited about the opportunity. Excited to still be around. I mean, you won't get away with not seeing me like in San Diego at a conference and show next year. So thanks for saying that. I appreciate it.
Nope. Thanks for everything you've done. And appreciate your time and effort with us, and like I said, this will not be the last time our paths cross. So.
No, absolutely not. Jeff White, our guest today on the GCSA podcast. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to episode 63 of the GCSAA podcast. I want to thank Jeff White, CGCS, for giving us the time that he did today and for being so open about his career in golf and his plans for his year as the association's 87th president. I've been lucky to call Jeff a friend for a long time and know that he has nothing but the association's and the industry's best interests at heart as he moves through his year in office. So can't wait to see what comes next for Jeff. Also, need to thank everyone again from Indian Hills Country Club for their hospitality during our recording session. And I want to thank my colleagues, Tyler Stover and Roger Billings, for all their help on the tech side of making this one possible. As always, more episodes of the podcast are on the way, so keep a close eye on your feeds for all of those. But for now, let me say goodbye by thanking podcast editor Evan Shapiro, everyone at Enview for their continued support of the podcast, the GCSAA Board of Directors, and the fantastic staff at Association Headquarters in Lawrence, Kansas. And of course, my thanks to each of you for subscribing, downloading, and listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and thank you for listening to the GCSAA podcast.